The Bloodstream podcast is made possible by Takeda and is intended for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. Please consult with professionals before making any healthcare decisions.
He said, we're going to approach this disease a little differently. He said, you just be a mom. Everybody has a mom. And he said, we're going to get this bill passed.
That voice belongs to renowned HIV, AIDS, and hemophilia advocate Jeannie White Ginder. She joins me today for an interview in honor of World AIDS Day, December 1st. But before I speak any more about that, allow me first to say hello and welcome to the Bloodstream Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick James Lynch. I'm flying solo this week, or today, not this week. There is a regularly scheduled episode this week, but this is a bonus in honor of World AIDS Day, which this year coincides with the 30th anniversary of both Ryan White's death and the passing of the Ryan White Care Act, a monumental piece of legislation still in effect today, still driving a vision for the future, which we will get into in just a little bit. If you have never heard Jeannie White Ginder speak before, you are in for quite a treat. And if you have, which I anticipate most of this audience has, I think you're going to hear Jeannie share some thoughts, perspectives, and stories that you wouldn't have necessarily heard her share in one of her previous speeches. So without further delay, I'll say please subscribe to the Bloodstream Podcast. Please share the Bloodstream Podcast. Please follow the Bloodstream Podcast on social media. But most importantly, please enjoy this conversation with Jeannie White Ginder. All right. I am fortunate now to be joined by my friend and renowned AIDS and hemophilia advocate, Jeannie White Ginder, to honor World AIDS Day, to talk a little about World AIDS Day, the Ryan White Care Act, and how Jeannie's doing today. So let's start there, Jeannie. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. Good to be a part of your program.
Thank you. I appreciate you coming back. And, you know, a few months ago, we aired a special episode in honor of Roy when he unfortunately left us. And I know, you know, many of in our audience and in the community know about Roy's passing, but I don't know that many people have gotten to hear your voice since learning that news. So would you mind just sharing with people, how are you doing right now?
I've never really been by myself. And it's rough. I mean, Roy was such a jewel. I mean, I know a lot of people love their husbands and think they got the best husbands, but I really had one of the best husbands there was. And you know, he just went through so much. And even though they go through so much, you think that they're still going to be here tomorrow.
Sure.
And then finally those tomorrows run out. And it was really rough on him. And we went to a furniture store the other day, and next to it was the dialysis that Roy went to. And it's only about 3 miles from our house, so it was really close. And I tell you, that just tore me up. I mean, I think, you know, he was on dialysis for 17 years. And so, you know, got a kidney and it failed after, you know, we fought 2 years to try to save it. And, you know, it was exhausting. It really was. A lot of miles put on the car traveling to Largo, Florida he just went through so much. And yes, I mean, it wasn't me that was sick. I know we both shared in, you know, all the pain, but I mean, he was a survivor. And I tell you, I was truly, truly blessed. He could do anything or thought he could anyway. So, you know, and just seeing him work on his truck, when we first got married in 92, he bought these two trucks that were to make one, okay? And there was nothing to them. I mean, it was like, and to know that he worked on that for so many years and just about ready to get it done, you know. It's just sad. It's just sad, but I still have the truck. And, you know, it was another hemophilia mom that wrote me on Facebook, and she said that you're lucky because you have Roy and he's everywhere around you. She said, because he was such a part of your life and he did everything, you know, there wasn't anything, as I said, that he thought that he couldn't do. And so that's so true. I have so many memories that are everywhere. And just looking out to the barn, I know his truck's in there, you know?
And so many people who came to love him through you, you know, got used to seeing him with you at events. They got to meet him.
And he loved the hemophilia community. I mean, you know, he just thought that he fit in. He felt like everybody treated him and respected him. And, you know, he was a kind of a quiet guy. But at the same time, if you dare talk cars with him or trucks or old cars, you know, you had a friend for life.
That's right. Yes, I think Rob on my side knows that very well. So thanks for sharing that, Jeannie. And of course, we're also living through such an unusual time. So I have to ask you as well, how are you and Andrea and your mom doing through COVID lately? And how's the situation down by where you are in Florida?
Florida is terrible. It's DeSantis, the governor, is just, you know, has not acted like the COVID exists, really. I mean, it's not, they don't require a mask. I mean, I think a lot of the buildings will say wear a mask, but then there's a lot of people that don't. My mom and Andrea and I, we try, it's just us three. I mean, we try to keep it with us three. So it's scary because my mom is 94 and, you know, I don't know. I wear my mask, and so does Andrea. She's back at school teaching, which is kind of rough because, you know, we don't know how she might be exposed, even being a school teacher. But, you know, it's something we all have to be aware of and, you know, be concerned about.
Yeah, I was curious to know, actually, how has Andrea fared in the school? How are the students doing through this?
Well, a lot of hers all came back. It's a very rural area, and I think 75% of them came back. They're not doing it virtual. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're kind of sectioned off. There's a section where they wear masks and a section where they don't wear masks. And Andrea always, they're kind of far away from her, and she always wears her mask, always. She coaches volleyball and soccer. And she's, of course, she hasn't done soccer yet, but she's been coaching volleyball. And the girls don't wear a mask when they're playing, but, you know, all the other times they wear a mask. So it's a different world, I think, we live in. And there's been some cases, but, you know, Florida, I don't think has to report all the cases. And so it's kind of, you have to just kind of be aware and you can kind of tell, I think, certain ones that if they're absent or if they're quarantined. It's scary until we get the vaccine and get everybody vaccinated. Let's hope that we can do away with this. And then next Thanksgiving, we can all be together. And
I like that vision. You know, I'm seeing Dr. Anthony Fauci for the last 8 months, you know, on the news all the time, getting the scientific information out there. I'm also watching, for some of the work that we're doing together, Jeannie, footage of Dr. Anthony Fauci in 1984, 1985, and 1986 talking about HIV. And how, I mean, aside from him, do you see parallels between what we went through then and what we're going through now?
Oh, yeah, a lot of parallels. But I mean, AIDS was different because it was so discriminated against. I mean, if you had AIDS, just like you were an outcast. Nobody wanted nothing to do with families, you know, would not support their children. I mean, it was blaming people and, you know, now we're in a situation where with the COVID, I think that we're all scared. I mean, you don't know, you don't have to have had, you know, be exposed to blood products or, right. You know, the ways that the AIDS epidemic was spread. I mean, now we can't see it. We can't, we don't know where it's at. You know, it's all around us. And so, and we don't know who's going to get it and who don't. But with AIDS, you know, I mean, you had to be very careful choosing your partners and who you have sex with. So I think, it's completely different, but the discrimination around AIDS, I think, was a lot worse. I think it was a lot worse. it was just a horrible, horrible time. And especially like for our hemophilia community to have a lot of dealt with so in silent because of the discrimination that surrounded it. And people didn't want to lose their jobs, their insurance, you know, it's a lot different. But now I think the hemophilia community would be together. I think we would come together. Where I think back then I said, I think that we didn't have the support of the leaders of the hemophilia community. And I think now we would have that.
Do you feel like on a government level, federally, do you think we have the leadership that we need, or are we moving in the right direction to get, knowing what you know, again, from having lived through the HIV and AIDS pandemic and the importance of leadership to ultimately resolve things, do you think we're trending in the right direction?
I think as long as we listen to Fauci, I think this is a disease, I think, that we could stop the spread if everybody wore a mask. And it sounds like it's so simple, but we could almost and not have to worry about it if everybody at first would have started wearing a mask.
Yeah.
I really think that if we could have just listened to Fauci and signed, he's been through it all. He has seen it all with infectious diseases. I mean, he's not afraid to voice the truth. And if he finds out something different, he's not afraid to tell you, you know, hey, you know, we didn't know then, but we know now.
Right.
And I think we need the truth. We need the truth out there about it, what we need to do. Tell us how we can, you know, but there's so many people now that have been so brainwashed, I think, in thinking that, you know, well, I don't have to worry about it. It's not going to be that bad unless it strikes you or your family. I mean, and right. That's when people are being made believers, you know, and even them, I've seen on TV, a lot of the nurses even saying, you know, that they have people on their deathbed that still doesn't believe that it's fatal, that it's going to kill them, you know? Yeah. So I think we have to believe that it's real. This disease is real. Just like AIDS was real. I think we just have to listen to the scientists and find out for ourselves what we have to do as a society that can keep us from not being infected. The only thing with COVID is it's in the air. I mean, you know, we don't know, we can't see it, and there's not much we can do to prevent it except for wearing a mask.
Right. And being responsible with the people that we keep company with, as you kind of alluded to earlier, you, Andrea, and your mom being so, you know, adherent to just sticking to each other. So we are speaking in honor of World AIDS Day. So we'll talk now about what World AIDS Day is. It was designated December 1st for the first time in 1988, and it's considered an international day dedicated to raising awareness of the AIDS pandemic, caused, of course, by the spread of HIV, and the mourning those who have lost, who have been lost as a result of the disease. I know that you have participated in World AIDS Day events for many years, Jeannie, probably not virtually before this year, but I guess we say that about everything this year. What's most important for people to know about AIDS today? What's the message that you think people need to hear on this particular World AIDS Day?
Oh gosh, we have meds. So I think it's important for us to remember the people that got us to where we are. And I had the privilege of knowing a lot of these people that are no longer here. And I think it's for their legacy in itself, we owe a lot of gratitude and to those people, because I seen the work that was done by especially a lot of the gay community that was fighting for everybody to get recognition, because nobody was wanting to join their support in their cause. At the time, because of the discrimination that surrounded it. But they are the smart ones as far as did all the legislation for the Ryan White Care Act. And the dedication and the hours that I've seen people working on this cause, and then to see them as I would go to DC, you know, once a month or so, and know that they are no longer here. And then there would be somebody, I'd almost hate to even ask, you know, like, we're so-and-so, because I almost kind of knew the answer. because people were dying so fast with the AIDS in the AIDS epidemic, because we didn't have no meds. We had very few treatments, you know.
Now, in spite of having the meds, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but in spite of having the meds, you know, I do hear people say, AIDS, isn't that kind of like a chronic disease now? You know, you can live with AIDS. It's HIV. It's not as bad now. What do you think when you hear people say things like that?
Oh, yeah, but this is something that we can prevent now. I mean, through education and prevention. We know what causes AIDS now. I mean, you know, there was a lot of theories that people thinking kissing, tears, sweat, and saliva might spread AIDS. But, you know, and mosquitoes and fleas. I mean, I heard it all when Ryan had AIDS. So, but we know now. We know how, you know, what we can do. We know people that are at high risk, and education is so important with them. And plus, we can get people on early treatment. You know, once you find out you're HIV positive, you can get on the meds and you can live a relatively normal life, and you can get zero detectable. You could even have kids. I mean, people are just, I mean, what I wouldn't have given for that day to be for my son. So I think, you know, just, you know, we've come a long way, and I think we have to listen. We have to listen to the experts like COVID. We have to listen and do what we're supposed to do if we want to wipe out this disease.
You mentioned going to D.C., and a lot of people, obviously, the legislation bears Ryan's name. We know Ryan was a significant figure in that legislation getting passed, but I don't know if everybody knows just how important you were to helping the bill get the necessary support in the Senate so that it could finally get passed. Can you share with us a little bit from your first trips to D.C.? What were those like? What do you remember from those days?
Oh, my gosh. I was so uninformed about the government. I mean, I knew nothing about the government. And from the time when Senator Kennedy called on the phone at the hospital and Ryan's last days, and Elton was there by Ryan's side, and he was kind of answering the phone calls, and we were trying to kind of filter out whether me from the media and other people, whether they were really friends or not.
Yeah, sure.
And Elton said, "This is a phone call I think you should take." And it was Senator Kennedy. And he said, "You know, Ryan is such a nightly news story. We have people caring about people with AIDS now." He said, "With your permission, we would like to name this bill the Ryan White Care Act." And I, at the time, just thinking that would be nice, not ever really realizing how enormous that bill would become.
Yeah.
And I kind of even forgot about it. After I lost my son, I thought, you know, I kind of just blank, feeling sorry for myself and, you know, feeling depressed. And then I get a call from Senator Kennedy again, about 3 weeks after Ryan's funeral, and wanted me to come to D.C. And I said, "Oh, no." I said, "Ryan did that, not me." And he said, "No, we really need your voice." I said, "You know, I can't." I said, "I'm not smart enough." I said, I'm afraid I would hurt the cause more than help the cause." And they said, "Well, Ryan's death is so fresh on everybody's minds. This is a chance for us to make a difference in the AIDS epidemic. Think about it." Well, my friends from AMFAR called, and they said, "Please do this for us. Please do this for us living with AIDS today." And I said, "You know, I don't know anything." I said, "I know nothing about the bill." They said, "We know about the bill." And I just kept saying, "You know, I don't know. I don't think I can." And finally, Senator Hatch called me himself, and he said, "We're not going to take no for an answer." He said, "I have 25 senators lined up for you." He said, "We're going to approach this disease a little differently." He said, "You just be a mom. Everybody has a mom." And he said, "We're going to get this bill passed." And he said, "You know, I said, "Oh, I'm so nervous." I said, "I don't know whether I can do that." He goes, "Remember, just be a mom." He kept saying, "Just be a mom. You know, everybody has a mom." And so I took it that's how I had to approach it too. So when I went to D.C. and I talked to senators, that was the only way I felt comfortable. I wasn't somebody that wanted to be somebody, you know.
Right.
I was somebody just sharing my story and telling what a mom is going through and what a mom is dealing with, you know, through this AIDS epidemic. And we got the bill passed. And
do you remember, Jeannie, the first senator who you spoke with?
You mean Biden?
Well, yes, I do.
They were all very supportive because, I mean, especially some of the Democrats. The one person I remember so well was Jesse Holmes, and that was just because he was so negative.
Right.
They pointed me, there's Jesse Holmes, and he was getting in the elevator. And so I wasn't supposed to be in that elevator. It was for staff.
Like staff only, yeah.
I'd just gotten in that elevator, and I said, Mr. Holmes, and I said, I'd like to be able to talk to you about the Ryan White Care Act, you know. And he looked at me real funny, and he recognized me. He goes, call my office, you know. So, I mean, because most people were very willing to talk with me, but you still had those people that, you know, would not vote for a bill like that for anything, and that was one of them, the Jesse Helms. So that story I really remember because they were even shocked that I would try to do that. But I just felt like at the time that, I don't know, maybe he would listen to me, you know. He didn't really, but, you know, that's...
You had to try.
But I don't know. Everybody, I had so much support, and everybody was very, I met Biden at the time. He was a new senator. I met so many people, and I kind of got people mixed up with kind of who they were.
Sure, yeah.
I wish I would have been better remembering names and stuff. But thankfully, Michael Iskowitz and some people, you know, that worked for Senator Kennedy, was able to, and Tom Sheridan, who was the lobbyist. I mean, these were people that I had no idea, you know, who they were or anything. And so,
right.
But they were very supportive and believed in me.
Yeah.
When I really kind of didn't believe in myself, but with their help, you know, it was something that I never realized how enormous that bill would become, you know, and how many people. But I mean, you do it because you care, and the suffering that you saw in your own life, and you didn't want other people suffering too.
Yeah, of course. Well, just to provide a little context, because the point you just made about how many people the bill continues to support, how large it really is. So the bill, the Ryan White Care Act, it's administered by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the HHS, specifically Health Resources and Services Administration, commonly referred to as HRSA. And what the program does is it provides grants to cities, states, counties, and local community-based organizations across the country. It provides care and treatment services to low-income people with HIV who are among the hardest-to-reach populations. And this is the 30th anniversary to this day. 500,000 people a year benefit from the Ryan White Care Act. Jeannie, what do you think? I mean, it's 30 years of the Ryan White Care Act, which also means it's 30 years since we lost Ryan. What do you think he would think to know that in the 30 years since his efforts, he has continued to affect so many people? I know he had a big vision, and I know he went big, but do you think he even could have seen this?
No, he always said, you know, if I can live 5 years, Mom, I think they'll have a cure. He said, they're really working hard on it. And he lived 5.5 years, you know, and that dream and everything that just, it was going to be right around the corner. And I think he would be shocked. He'd say, what took them so long?
Sure.
Why did it take him 30 years? I think he would be very, very proud that because I know he saw so many that I always like to tell the story about the guy that there was a drug called PHA-23, and it wasn't successful, but that was one of the ones that maybe was going to be in clinical trials and promising. And Terry Byrne from AMFAR called and said, you know, is there any way you'd like to be a part of the study? I mean, my golly, you're there. You know, you're looking for something. You want something so bad. And so we flew to Roosevelt Memorial Hospital, and Ryan was getting his blood work drawn. And we were in a lab room, and this gentleman came up to Ryan. He said, oh my gosh, you're Ryan White, aren't you? He was so thrilled that he got to meet Ryan White, that this was Ryan White, you know? And Ryan went, yeah, because you kind of didn't know whether you really wanted to say who you really are or not,
sure,
you know,
yeah,
because of all the negativity. But this was a very good, this was a supportive person. And he said, here you are just reading a comic book. He goes, they found 12 tumors in me. He said, I haven't been diagnosed with AIDS yet, but they're pretty sure that's what I have. He said, I want to thank you for all you've done for people with AIDS. And I remember him turning around, walked away, and you don't get his name. And, you know, I can just kick myself for not ever, you know, following up who he was, you know. Because Ryan was just reading a comic book, you know, and he goes, here you are just reading a comic book. And he, Ryan, when the gentleman walked away, Ryan said, you know, Mom, I'm the only one that really knows what he's going through. We're both fighting the same disease. So, you know, it was a real realization to Ryan. You know, once you have AIDS, you're just like everybody else who has AIDS, you're fighting to stay alive. So Ryan wanted to help everybody. He wanted to help eliminate this disease. And that's why I think he was so supportive of MFAR and so many of the gay community, because he saw them just like him. He was being treated like he was had done something bad or wrong, and that he had to been gay or he wouldn't have got the disease. I mean, we heard all this. And this is God's punishment for people who do bad things. I mean, we heard all that. So I think it was really important to Ryan to look at the disease and not the people who have it.
Sure. Yep. You know, something I read, Jeannie, which I think is really, again, just speaks to the continued impact that this bill is having. HRSA Administrator Tom Ingalls said earlier this year, the Ryan White HIV/AIDS program is a key part of the administration's Ending the HIV Epidemic Plan for America, which is a 10-year initiative that aims to reduce new HIV infections in the United States by 90% by 2030. So again, Ryan's bill will, for another decade, continue to do great work, now expanding to include this vision for 90% reduction of new infections by 2030, which is just outstanding, outstanding work. You know, Jeannie, another name, one that's perhaps more recognizable than, to your point, the many, many, many people who fought so hard who we'll never hear about. This person we've heard about, but I don't think we know, or maybe we don't appreciate just how involved he was in your life, and that's Elton John. And earlier this year, he had the, or maybe it was last year, it's hard to remember it sometimes what year we're in anymore, but at the 25th anniversary of his starting his AIDS Foundation, which has done extraordinary work around the globe, when asked who he wanted to honor him for the 25 years of work, Elton John said, Jeannie Weickinder. What was it like to be the person to give Elton that moment, to share that moment with him on stage?
I felt very out of place and so proud that he thought of me. I mean, the whole room, I sat with Sting, I sat with all these people and it was kind of neat. President Clinton, former President Clinton was there at my table. I mean, all these celebrities.
Wow.
Governor Cuomo was at the table.
Is Matt Lauer at the table?
Matt Lauer sat next to me, and who's the guy I didn't know who he was? I forget. Billy Joel. Oh, yes. Sorry. Billy Joel.
Wait a minute. Can we pause right there? I think it's fantastic that at the Elton John 25th anniversary celebration, the person that Jeannie Weickinder did not recognize or know was Billy Joel. I just think for the story of Elton and Billy Joel, that's just a fun little wrinkle.
And it is. But he was so sweet. I said, you look so familiar. He said, I'm Billy Joel.
Oh, there you go.
And here he had a name card right there in front of him. And I didn't, you know, and I could have just read that without humiliating myself. He was so sweet. You know, he goes, well, I've changed a little bit, you know.
Fair enough.
Oh, because I don't know. From what I remember to really Joel, that wasn't, you know, I wouldn't have probably recognized him. So, but it was really, everybody was just so nice. I mean, Judith Light, I saw her. She came up too from the back. She was sitting more in the back and congratulated me. And it was so neat because President Clinton, he was surrounded by everybody, you know. And I was hoping to be able to say hi to him or anything, but he got up and come around to me. And it was like so thrilling. I mean, and he said that he remembered, you know. I said, do you remember what I did? He said, you put my your hand on my shoulder.
He remembered that.
Yes, he remembered that. Wow. Oh, yeah. That was because you're not supposed to touch the president. And I during the signing, the official signing, it was such a proud moment for me. And I was just, you know, they told me everything to do, follow three steps behind him to the podium. And then when he goes, sets down, you know, I am to be on the right hand side. They, you know, they gave me these little orders and I thought, I think I can do that, you know, but that media was everywhere. There was probably 100 media in this room. And it was such a proud moment. He was picking up the pins and signing his name with each pin. Those are the sponsors of the Ryan White Care Act. And it was such a proud moment. I went and put my hand on his shoulder and all the media was click, 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 you know, and I thought, should I take it back or not? You know, he turned around, looked at me and he nodded and laughed like it was fine. So I just left it there. I left my hand there on his shoulder. He said it was okay. So, I mean, it was just, you know, so rewarding. And I think they still remember me. I mean, I hadn't seen him since his inauguration, really, kind of. And just to think at the Elton thing that he remembered me, you know, and cared enough to come around and say hi, because I wanted to, but he was surrounded by so many celebrities, Hollywood, you know, that he came to me, that's just a very proud moment.
It's again, yes, as it should be. And again, it just says so much about the impact that Ryan and that you have had over the course of the last 35 years. So Jeannie, as we're coming up on our time, I only have one other question for you. And that is, you know, with the last week on the podcast, we were talking about our gratitudes for 2020. And though it's been a bizarre year, still, it is important to reflect and talk about what we're grateful for. And so I'm going to ask you that. What's a gratitude that you have for 2020, as well as a hope for 2021? So a gratitude for 2020 and a hope that you have for 2021.
The gratitude, I think that the Dodgers winning the World Series.
There you go.
And I'm only saying that because my dad, who and my brother, my dad was a Dodger fan since Brooklyn.
Right.
And as a little girl, 4 years old, I remember eating sardines with him out of a can just because I wanted to be close to my dad, you know, and I ate them sardines. And but I think that was a thrill. And Ryan was asked about, you know, Ryan got to go to an event in LA and they asked Ryan if there was anything he wanted to do. And he said, what do you mean? And they said, well, you know, any place he wants to go. And Ryan said, you know, could I take my dad to a Dodger game? And that was so thrilling. And they loved it because Ryan wasn't thinking about himself.
Yeah.
His dad had always wanted to meet Tommy Lasorda, you know, and all that. And we got to go down on the field. My dad got to meet Tommy Lasorda. I mean, that's some of the things I think that that was a proud moment in this year. And it was something to watch on TV.
Yeah.
This is the day the Dodgers won the World Series. That was the 19th anniversary of my dad's death. So,
wow.
Yeah. So he won, or they won on the day that he died. So it was really, spooky. We were, and my brother too. So we were Dodger fans. I mean, we were Cubs fans too, and being from Indiana, but at the same time, sure. We never left the Dodgers.
Wow.
And I think that was one thing, but I think there was, the advancements, I think the AIDS epidemic, I think that has to be a, you know, a big, big thing that I have so much gratitude for because of the people that worked on it. Gosh, what else? I mean, the future is getting rid of this COVID. I mean, just getting people to understand that it's real and to hoping the vaccines all work for everybody and the healthcare workers. I mean, you know, it's just very, very stressful. We're going to get back to okay. We're going to be okay, but it's going to be another year probably before we can have Thanksgiving and Christmas like we always did before. But we can't get there if everybody doesn't do their part. I think that by doing the best part, wear a mask, and everybody needs, every time they go out, wear a mask and limit your friends, you know. The only thing is, though, I mean, we've worked on COVID for such a shorter time. And we've come so far on that. I just wish we could have came that far, you know, with the AIDS epidemic. Yeah. You know, I made it real to people. I mean, but at the same time, we have accomplished so much. And I'm so thrilled with the vaccines coming out.
And, you know, Jeannie, I also can't help but think, had it not been for Ryan, how much longer may have it had taken to get the appropriate attention. I mean, there was obviously also Rock Hudson's coming out and then passing. There were other events that led people to start paying more attention. But without Ryan, it may have taken even longer than it did take. It certainly would have. I think it's a question of how much longer.
Well, I think as far as Hatch was concerned about, which, you know, this bill was bipartisan. But it was bipartisan because of Ryan. Hatch thought that that's the only way he could get it passed was to name it the Ryan White Care Act. It was actually Hatch's idea to name it the Ryan White Care Act. And that was because then people wouldn't feel so committed about, you know, saying they were supporting the gay community. It was, if they supported Ryan and supported the AIDS epidemic, they were supporting the gay community too. So it was including everybody. So I, you know, and look, there were some times it was rough. I mean, I remember the worst part of me that I was so confused about was in a Washington DC march when they wanted me to handcuff my wrist to the White House gate. Mm. And I said, oh, no, there's no way I can do that. I mean, I felt like that people had to respect me. And if it was for attention to be on the cover of a magazine, I could not do that. And I thought of my daughter immediately. I thought there's no way that, you know, I want to, for her to disrespect me by doing something to get on the cover. And I remember being at the podium, and this was when I was confused. I was confused where I'm at, what I'm doing, what am I doing here? We were at a podium and I was speaking, and this poof went up beside me. And I had no idea what it was. It was fire, you know, and it was so scary. And I remember turning around and seeing, but didn't know really what I was seeing. And somebody in the media said, Mrs. White, what do you think of ACT UP burning the American flag? And because that's the first I knew it was the American flag, you know, and I said, I don't support burning the American flag. But I understand the frustration that's went with this disease and getting people to care and seeing so much destruction. And I felt like Ryan was telling me what to say, and I had already lost Ryan. And I felt like Ryan was speaking, because that sure didn't sound like it was me coming out of my mouth, you know. But I was trying to be honest, and that's what I've always tried to be, is honest about my feelings. And I want to support, you know, the disease, but at the same time, I have to stay within my boundaries of what I truly respect and believe too, because I had no idea what was going on. And because you want to be supportive, but at the same time, stay true to yourself too.
Jeannie, thank you for the time and for spending part of this World AIDS Day with me. So appreciative of you and all you've done. And I hope in a few months, maybe we can chat again and see how you're faring in 2021, as hopefully we're starting to get on the comeback from this COVID quarantine time that we're in now.
Patrick, I'd like to say thank you to all the hemophilia community on the loss of Brian, and also the loss of my husband, Roy. The cards and thank yous, when I asked for people to write him in the hospital, they did. And I'm so proud of the hemophilia community, and I want to say a big thank you.
Well, I think I can safely say on behalf of the community, you are more than welcome. We love you, Jeannie.
Love you.